Well, our next guest, Josh Krasuski, is currently the executive director for the Connecticut Junior Soccer Association. He is a former assistant coach at UConn Men's Soccer Big East Champion, the former assistant coach at SCSU Men's Soccer National Champions, former head coach at the University of New Haven Men's Soccer. I think it's fair to say that our next guest knows a little bit about soccer and coaching soccer and youth and soccer. He is also the father of three daughters, ages 12, 10, and 8, and I hear that they also participate in soccer, a resident of Newington here in Connecticut and grew up in Wallingford. Hi, Josh Krasuski. Welcome to the Lisa Wexler Show today. How are you?
Hi, Lisa. I'm doing very well. Hope you are as well. Thanks for having
me. Yes, it's a pleasure. So tell us, Josh, where are we at literally right now? If you had to give me a news bulletin of the most important facts to know about youth soccer in Connecticut, what is it? Where are we?
Well, and I know you said it going into the break there, I'm going to share a lot from the youth soccer side, but I gather there are a lot of similarities across all youth sports. Where we are at is, we're shut down, and, we have a long way to go, although the interest certainly is there to get back to a sense of normalcy. I think it's going to be a longer path than maybe some assume. I mean, we have some that are looking at the May 20th date currently in place and believe that, when that happens, that we're all going to run back out to the fields. But I think we have a longer road than maybe we want to think at this point.
So let me ask you, Josh, when you say that, tell me why you say that. What are you thinking about the longer road? Are you thinking that the data is not going to support it, or people are not going to feel comfortable, you're not going to feel comfortable? I really want to hear why you think, May 20th may be a laudable goal, but not a realistic one.
Yes, and just to be clear, we're letting, the CDC and local government and local health officials help guide us as it relates to the data and so forth. But I certainly believe that there is going to be an uncomfort level from parents, from families to, re-engage until possibly there's a vaccine, and until there's a consistent form of testing. The social distancing aspect, that is going to have to be adjusted quite extensively for us to get back to a normal game environment. If you talk about practice or training environments, you can manipulate those and kind of control those, but a game is a game. You have many spectators. You have people of different ages. You have obviously many youth that are out there playing, and that's harder to manipulate than a training environment. So I think the concerns are going to remain in place for quite some time. The other thing I'll add is, we may get the green light at some point, but then you have the trickle down effect to local municipalities, field access. Who is going to allow athletes to go back onto their fields within given towns? So I think there's still a lot of boxes that need to be checked before we get out there. And
they're not even letting people walk on fields. We've got padlocked gates to tiny little baseball fields all over our town in Westport. No one's allowed to even be on a field, much less do a contact sport on a field. Forget it.
Yes, agreed. And, at some point, we'll certainly be back out there. I just think it's going to take us a little longer than we would like at this point.
You know that there may never be a vaccine, right?
Correct, yes.
We were hoping that there will be, and people believe that COVID-19 is the kind of a virus that lends itself to a vaccine. And we have hundreds, if not thousands, of small companies and bigger companies around the world working on it. But, this promise of the world opens and the gates open when we have a vaccine, I hate to be such a cliche, but only time will tell, right? I mean, only time will tell. We don't know.
Correct. And I think, from a youth sports perspective as well, tournaments are a big events that a lot of kids participate in across all sports. And I think those are going to change as we see them currently or saw them, from travel, obviously, to staying in hotels, to coming from or entering into different hotspots. So I think that is going to change. I think we're going to see a much more community-based lack of, you know, lack of travel for the foreseeable future.
Interesting. Okay, so let's focus on that. First, so there really is a ray of very sunshine with COVID-19, and that is that if you're under the age of 20, you know, you might be passing it to people, that's true. But it's not affecting, thank God, it's not affecting our children. There are rare and isolated cases. There are outliers, but there are outliers for all kinds of diseases. But this pandemic, as a pandemic, thank God, does not seem to really be affecting our children. It just isn't. It doesn't mean that they're not carriers, and that's a big issue, and I understand that and everything else. But, I mean, I guess you know what it is? I just want to let the kids play. You know what I mean, Josh? I just want to let the kids – I know that that's – I'm not saying that that's the responsible thing to do, but it's my heart. Do you know what I mean? I just want to let the kids play.
I agree as well. We have just recently created a task force here to start constructing temporary return-to-play plans based on social distancing numbers and so forth. That's just
so what do they look like? How do you let kids play in social distance if you're a responsible youth coach? What does that look like?
Well, I think first and foremost, you're looking at much smaller groups than we're used to. And you need the ability to be flexible and adjust from what maybe you're used to. I mean, we're used to going out there in the soccer world with, you know, 22 to 32 players in a game environment and playing. Well, maybe those games now have to become five versus five games with less kids on a team, just being able to improvise a bit more than we were used to get those kids out there and doing something.
Maybe. And you know what else? This is the other thing, Josh, and this is where I think it's going to be key. I think you and youth sports are going to have to get hold of relatively reliable, maybe not foolproof, but relatively reliable testing. And you're going to have to test these kids with saliva or whatever the testing is that proves to be okay, maybe every week. Because if they don't have the active RNA and they're not sick, they go out and they get to play until the next time they're tested. Or, you know what I mean? And you do it often enough that you continue to reduce the risk of exposure and spread. Maybe that's what you have to do.
I agree. I think that's a very possible situation that we're going to have to be dealing with. But out of the gate, you know, we're looking at, okay, how if in a month from now we get a little bit of a green light, what does maybe our training environment look like and our game environment look like 2 months out from now, 3 months out from now, and then hopefully be able to move as soon as possible. We are holding on desperately for any type of event that we could possibly put out there for these kids because we all realize how important sports are. But, you know, there's a lot of boxes that need to be checked first and foremost.
Are you guiding as a coach? Are you doing any kind of Zooming with the people that you've been coaching to try and keep these kids back in physical shape?
We have provided a number of resources. I haven't gone the Zoom route yet. My Zoom life is composed of Zoom meetings all day long with different, you know, our national governing bodies and those that we answer to. But I have not brought that down to my my youth team that I coach. But I know many coaches have. And some have used it just in a simple meeting type setting, and some have actually, you know, done exercises with them. But many have been pushing out content so their kids can stay active.
Yeah, I mean, you know, muscles atrophy very quickly. Skills get, you know, and it's so easy to be more mental than physical. You know, even on a beautiful weekend like this weekend, if you get engrossed in your computer and you're talking about very often young men and women that play soccer, all they have to do is get on their computer. The hours go by and they're not exercising. I mean, it's easy to not exercise.
Correct. My wife battles with my daughters about this every day. We try to get them off of their iPads and outside.
Right.
And these are three that when we were up and going were being physically active 6 out of 7 days a week. You know, maybe they had a Friday off, but every other day of the week they're doing something. And now it's a little bit of a struggle to get them outside. So That's a real challenge for sure.
That is a real, real-life challenge. What do you think about camps? Do you think there'll be any soccer camps for the summer, Josh?
I think the overnight camps might be a little bit more of a question mark. I think some of the day camps, if they can organize based on when that camp might fall, earlier in the summer compared to later in the summer and so forth, you might be able to organize, again, differently than maybe you're used to. I think for any of this, any sport, any camp, any program, any league, I think the big, big word is going to be improvised. How can you adjust on the fly? And for those clubs, organizations, to be thinking about these things now, because there's not just going to be, a switch that we flip and everything is back to normal. So I would ask everybody to start planning that stuff now across all sports. The other issue, we talked about fields earlier in the local towns and so forth. You're going to have – it's not just soccer that's going to want access to the fields, when we start up again. It's all the sports that are going to want the fields. So there is going to there's going to be a little bit of a fight for field space too.
Oh, I bet.
It's not going to be easy. Every kid, no matter what sport they're playing, when we can go, deserves the opportunity to play. So hopefully everybody is trying to make those plans now.
Well, you know what? And I'll tell you something in terms of flexibility and creativity. If you don't have 10 on 10 and you have 5 on 5, so maybe you shrink your field so that somebody else can play on another part of the field.
Exactly. Exactly. thinking outside the box, even from a officiating standpoint. Okay, we talk about in soccer we have throw-ins where we use our hands and the ball is touching the goalkeeper's hands and then it's going out of bounds and someone's throwing it in from there. Maybe we have to tweak the rules of the game to maybe it's all kick-ins from outside. Outside the field, just really be able to think outside the box, come up with different ways so that we can get, these kids back out there.
And I want to just let you know something because you're so involved with kids and it's so important, I think, to share what other places are doing. So right now, Denmark has reopened its elementary schools and they're not requiring the kids to wear masks during the day. Israel opened its elementary schools, and they're requiring everybody but first graders have to wear masks throughout the day. Here's what Denmark is doing. Every hour on the hour, a bell rings. Everybody stops what they're doing. They wash their hands thoroughly, and they go back to school. And the next hour, they do it again. So that in a 6 or 7 hour day, they've made sure that even if the kids are touching whatever, that they are constantly washing your hands. It can't be said enough, Josh. The more we wash our hands, the less chance we're going to have of getting COVID-19.
Correct. I was reading a return to play from the Swiss Rugby Association, and they're going even as far as every so many minutes that they stop the play, and they're sanitizing the ball.
That's my point. That's my point. In other words, you make them wash their hands, you sanitize the ball. You make them wash their hands, they sanitize the ball. You do it enough that it becomes part of their routine, but then at least you can play.
Correct, and that's the most important piece. So we have to keep thinking. We have to work together, all the sports associations, and hopefully get these kids out there sooner than later.
Absolutely, Josh. Well, I'm glad for what you do. Keep us surprised. We're going to check in with you. Think about, the other sports. And I'm thinking about what you're saying, sharing fields, smaller teams, keeping it local. Maybe it will have the benefit of stronger community ties. There could be all kind of other wonderful things that come out of this as a result. Maybe it'll be a little bit, in a way, less highly pressurized for some of the kids.
Yes.
And it'll come back to just kicking a ball around,
Yeah.
I mean, there are things that will come out that won't be so bad.
Yes, I agree 100%. And I've said this to a few others when speaking about it. I agree that I think it is going to bring the games, whether it's, again, baseball, basketball, soccer, whatever, closer to home. You know, we've gotten into a much more of a, I don't want to say pay-to-play model, because you're paying for everything that you play. But, you know, that less pressurized that you spoke of, less finance that's required to play. You're going to come out of this, and people are not going to have the discretionary income that maybe they had going into this. And it's really giving those local communities, the recreation departments, a chance to kind of reinvent, you know, themselves, and hopefully take back the game a little bit, and bring it more local, as you mentioned.
Yeah, just kick a ball around, but figure it out. Kick it cleanly. Kicking clean balls around. Josh Krasuski, thank you so much for being on the show today. Much appreciated.
Thanks for having me.